During the winter of 1778, a dispirited, bedraggled army of 11,000 men huddled together in a valley 25 miles northwest of Philadelphia. Having suffered a series of defeats and hundreds of desertions, the poorly supplied troops spent the winter fighting the constant threat of disease, starvation, and the frigid, damp weather. Throughout the long months of wintering at Valley Forge, the leaders tirelessly drilled the men, determined to turn the troops from being a haphazard collection of ill-equipped, ill-trained revolutionaries into a disciplined force, united in the cause of independence. Overseeing this seemingly impossible feat was their commander-in-chief, George Washington. Time and time again, in the face of challenges which overwhelmed many, George Washington wrestled down his own discouragement and doubts to bring together every resource he could muster, even if it was merely the sheer force of his own personality, to lead his community, his comrades, and his country. George Washington was a fourth-generation Virginian, born into a family that was respected but not prominent in Virginia society. At age 11, the harsh realities of life in 18th century Virginia struck young Washington when his father died, leaving a widow and seven children. His formal schooling ended at age 15, with no opportunity for an advanced education. Because his status as a younger son provided few options, relatives urged him to join the British Navy, a suggestion resisted by his mother, who convinced George to try other avenues. At age 15, he worked as a plantation supervisor, and at 16, became a land surveyor of the Shenandoah Valley. Large for his age, Washington was already taller than the average man of his day, continuing to grow to a height of at least 6 feet 2 inches. As a boy, his large hands and feet made him appear somewhat clumsy. But eventually, he grew into a strong, well-coordinated horseman and surprisingly graceful dancer. While still a teenager, George Washington's older brother died, and George unexpectedly inherited the modest plantation of Mount Vernon. He turned from surveying land to farming tobacco. It was during Washington's first years of overseeing his own plantation that conflicts arose between the British and the French in and around the American colonies. Perhaps it was his impressive physical appearance that convinced local Virginia military leaders to give the inexperienced Washington the rank of major at the young age of 20. During the course of the ensuing French and Indian War, he was promoted through the ranks of the Virginia Regiment, leading men in battle after battle. Despite youthful blunders that led to some defeats, the young Washington proved himself to be a capable officer who possessed the confidence to learn from his mistakes. It was a harsh education, both on the battlefield and in the politics of leadership, an education that would serve him well in later years. At age 27, Washington resigned his commission with the rank of Brigadier General and returned to farming at Mount Vernon. The struggling plantation was burdened with debt, but accessing his resources, Washington worked to grow Mount Vernon into a profitable enterprise. A fortunate marriage to Martha Dandridge Curtis proved invaluable to Washington's efforts to change the fortunes of Mount Vernon. A wealthy widow with two children, Martha brought to the marriage 15,000 acres. As his wealth grew, so did his stature as a prominent community leader. He served in the Virginia House of Burgesses and as a justice of the peace. As the British government demanded more of the colonists while offering less, Washington spoke his mind against the injustices. Initially, his protests were behind the scenes, as he quietly opposed the 1765 Stamp Act, the first direct tax on the colonies. It wasn't until 1767 when the British enacted the Townshend Acts, that Washington emerged as a strong opponent to British policy. He chaired meetings, introduced proposals of boycotting English goods, and was a leading voice in calling for a Continental Congress. In 1774, Washington was selected to be a Virginia delegate to the First Continental Congress. When fighting between the colonists and the British broke out in 1775, George Washington blatantly signaled his readiness for war when he showed up at the Second Continental Congress wearing a military uniform. His stature and charisma, coupled with his well-known military expertise, struck a strong chord in many of the delegates, and they sought him as the leader of their army. Washington assumed command in the field in Massachusetts during the Siege of Boston. Immediately, Major General Washington realized the Army's desperate shortage of vital supplies, including food, weapons, and gunpowder. Evaluating his inadequate resources of men and supplies, Washington reorganized the Army, moving key artillery to positions that overlooked the city. And with little actual fighting, the British evacuated to Boston. Washington then moved his army to New York City. It was in New York that the colonists' army was fully tested when the British launched a massive naval and land assault, one of the largest of the Revolutionary War. Overwhelmed, the Continental Army retreated across the river and through New Jersey. The retreat created doubts among the soldiers and colonists about the future of the newly declared United States and its army. Discouraged but not defeated, Washington struck back. Under the cover of darkness on the Christmas night of 1776, Major General Washington led his troops across the Delaware River and claimed a victory over 1,000 professional Hessian soldiers. This was followed by a series of other victories that raised morale, both in the field and at home. Loyalty among the troops for their commander-in-chief was solidified, and larger numbers of young men were inspired to join the army. Washington was praised in both the colonies and abroad. British newspapers who routinely criticized the patriots of the Continental Congress praised Washington's personal character and qualities as a military leader. Even members of the British Parliament held up Washington's virtues as models of courage and leadership, applauding his attention to the welfare of his men, a trait lacking in many of their own commanders. The Continental Army suffered many defeats before knowing victory. Time and again, their mission appeared impossible, and their commander quietly struggled with his own despair. Yet, time and again, during his darkest hours, Washington refused to give up. As he told his fellow soldiers, "Your country is at stake, your wives, your houses, and all that you hold dear. You have worn yourself out with fatigue and hardships, but we know not how to spare you. If you will consent to stay, you will render that service to the cause of liberty and to your country, which you probably can never do under any other circumstances." Clinging to these ideals, Washington refused to capitulate, and with increased home support and late arriving assistance from foreign allies, he eventually led the Continental Army to victory in 1781. 2 years later, Washington retired from command with the intent to return to Mount Vernon and to the life of a gentry landowner. His retirement proved to be short-lived. During the summer of 1887, he was persuaded to attend the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia and was unanimously elected president of the convention. He reportedly said little during the debates, but his influence was known. The office of President of the United States of America was designed with Washington in mind. Despite his insistence that he did not want the position, in 1789, George Washington was again unanimously elected, this time as president of a unique government structured to be ruled by the voice of its people. A myriad of challenges confronted the infantile government, including crippling debt left from the war, foreign allies who blatantly attempted to manipulate the United States' domestic affairs, and opposing factions created by the president's most trusted advisors. Any one of these challenges could have derailed this experimental democratic society. However, throughout each threat and test, Washington's leadership glued the country together. He was a master at understanding when it was time to delegate responsibilities and when he needed to step in and assume control. He had an instinct for accurately judging the intellect and character of people, an ability that allowed him to bring together talented people with diverse ideas. George Washington was so effective in uniting opposing factions that when he wanted to retire after only one term in office, Thomas Jefferson urged him to run for a second term, declaring that the North and South will hang together if they have you to hang on. Washington refused to try for a third term, setting the tradition of two terms for the office of President of the United States, a tradition that was later enacted into law. Finally, Washington truly retired to Mount Vernon. As Thomas Jefferson wrote, "He was the only man in the United States who possessed the confidence of the whole." Such was the leadership of George Washington.